Hello and welcome to the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I'm Longover.
I'm Matt.
Again. I'm Willis.
Unfortunately, Joe will not be joining us this week. He had a prior engagement, so we're bringing back our favorite Matt to talk about a subject near and dear to all of our hearts. One of the, in my opinion, the most important parts of Game of Thrones, the plot deck. Yay!
Plots.
So, one of the cool things about it is we recently just got a fun spoiler for a plot. It's a reprint from 1.0, which I'm really excited about. If anyone, Joe, who's been complaining about First Snow of Winter, this is a great counter to it. And I'm talking about Forgotten Plans. Has everyone here seen the spoiler for it?
I have not seen the spoiler of the card, but I know it's text and stats.
Sure. Well, I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's Forgotten Plans. It is a 4 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim plot. It's a scheme. It has 6 reserve. It states, while it is not the plot phase, treat the text box on each revealed non-scheme plot card as if it were blank, except for traits. Which I think we'll probably get into talking about Forgotten Plans a little more in the later part. But I think one thing that a lot of new players and even experienced players agonize over in the deck building process is, what plots do I play? Now, I don't know about you guys, but I usually start with a stack of 10 to 12 plots and kind of work my way down afterwards.
Only 10? I'm way over 10 when I start, usually.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to balance between what effects do you want and what's going to work best for the deck, in my opinion. In Game of Thrones, one of the best things about the plot deck, it's the one thing that you have control over. Like variants of the deck aside, you have ways to swing the game based simply on the plots you play. And I think that's what makes it, even though it's only 7 cards, such an important decision in every single deck. I mean, would you guys agree?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you can have the same 60 cards between 2 decks, but if the plots, I played Darren or somebody a week or two ago. Ray. I played Ray. We were both playing Lannister's Son decks, and he didn't have a single copy of a plot that I had.
Sure.
And I just kind of looked at his stuff and was just like, wow, he thinks very differently than me.
That's interesting, though, with as limited as a plot pools we have, for what's usable.
The plot pool is actually more robust than like any other pool of cards, like characters or events or attachments.
Because the only limit is there's only some you can have one of in such a limited deck.
No. But I mean, like, how many are there? There's at least 30 right now, right?
I would say more than 30.
Yeah,
at this point, right?
Probably between like 40 and 50.
Sure.
I think there were 30 just in the core.
But I mean, like, you're only picking 7. Yeah, there's probably 30 in the core. They're picking 7 out of a pool and neglecting like faction plots because you only play one of those. Probably at least 40, 41 plots. So I don't think it's quite as limiting as when you have to pick like 30 characters and you only have like 50 characters or 60 characters to pick from.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the things that you guys go through when you build your plot decks? I mean, what are some of the things that you think about? I mean, obviously for me, the first thing I think about is, what is the theme of this deck? What am I trying to accomplish? Is it an aggro deck? Is it a control deck? Is it, stasis deck? What is this deck doing? And, there's my obvious choices for that deck type. And then, there's the classic choices that everyone has to make. What are your econ plots? What are your reset plots? What are your high initiative plots? What are some things you guys think about?
Initiative doesn't matter to me at all in most decks. The very first thing I usually think of is, do I want Wildfire?
Okay.
And I usually have the answer almost immediately. I already know when building the deck whether I intend to use Wildfire or not.
Sure. What influences that? What makes you...
I've been running a lot of Lannister recently.
Sure.
And there's just no need for it.
Yeah.
My guys are better than my opponents. I don't want to go killing my guys off.
Yeah, that's fair. Do you run First Snow then instead of Wildfire? Like, is that...
Oh, yeah.
Then it's a matter of, like, which one you're going to run for, right? Which one you're going to... Which type of reset. Like, one which doesn't not kill, one which just shoves them all back in their hand.
Put everybody back in their hand. That's fine. I can ambush out guys for claim and to prevent my Tylan from getting marched.
Sure. I mean, like with Starkmath, like, what are some of your considerations? I mean, just start, you know, military, aggro, like that kind of thing.
I wouldn't say most of my decks are aggro in the typical sense of a card game of try to win quickly. That's not quite how it ends. Like, an aggro deck in Game of Thrones is just get a bunch of power really quickly, so like a knight deck. But it is military aggression, if you want to use that for aggro. But usually my plot considerations are kind of what the deck does. It usually has 5 slots dedicated to I need a particular thing to happen, so I'm going to use these for that. And then 2 flex slots, because usually a game only goes about 5 turns, so you don't necessarily have to have every plot be relevant every game.
I have the same sort of thinking as Matt. I usually make sure I have at least, depending on the deck, most of the time, like I'm thinking about Baratheon right now, the big concerns I have are playing my Stannis and playing my King. But those are the 2 high-cost cards, and I have to have econ plots capable of playing them. So I need at least, if I'm playing Loyal, I need at least a 5 cost and at least a 5 gold and at least a 6 gold. Because I don't like the on-table economy helps, but I don't want to go like, shit, I didn't get any on-table economy, now I can't play my King.
Yeah, which makes goes back to, I mean, plots are the one thing that we can't.
So I leave my, depends on how many high-cost characters I'm running, but I usually have at least 2 economy plots. And I like to keep the rest of my plots, like, at pretty good vanilla economy stats, like 4 gold. If I'm running something that has 3 gold cost or less, it better have just an amazing effect on it, and I probably won't run more than 1 in a plot deck. Like, if I'm playing Counting Coppers, I might not be playing anything else as 3 gold cost or less. Some extenuating circumstances. Definitely in Greyjoy, I was running First Nose and Counting Coppers, but everything else was 4 gold or higher. That's why I don't really like their plot, the Kraken card.
The Rise of the Kraken.
Rise of the Kraken.
Yeah.
I still love Nabal. It's still working
Nabal's
for me every time.
Yeah, it's fine. I think it's going to get worse and worse because there are a lot of good winter plots right now. Like, I was just building some decks yesterday and going through them, and I didn't realize how good some of the stats are on them. Like, the 5-0-1, even though it, like, blanks initiative, I don't really care about that too much. It's like a 5 gold plot, which is really pretty good.
And especially when you're keying it off of other
winter. Yeah, and it's like winter, so it's not like it's going to get hit with Nabal's Superiority. So now I have like a winter card and a summer card that both have 5 gold costs that I can play, so I can more easily play around Nabal's Superiority, and it's just going to grow, I think. And even that one winter card, the one that has 2 claim on it, everybody loses the power from the house, but it's a 4 gold cost economy. So that's like my highest concern most of the time is economy, because I don't want to be in a situation where I can't play cards in my hand.
Sure. I mean, I think going back to what Mike was saying about Nabal's Superiority, I was building a Baron Lion deck and working through my block cards, and I was playing against a Greyjoy player who has a penchant for running Nabal's Superiority first or second turn, and I realized that all of my plots, except for one of them, were Kingdom Plots.
That's something I also take in consideration, is make sure I have at least 1 or 2 non-Kingdom Edict plots.
Exactly. Like, Calm of Alestros is just, in my opinion, just a very classic way to do that, because, I mean, it's 5-3-1.
It's 5 and has an amazing effect on it.
Exactly. And I think it's a summer card. Once we see more summer cards, I think that card just becomes even more amazing.
That's going to be all over the place.
But one of the things, in terms of talking about variants to combat it, our only 2 options are tutoring, like, text searching, or burst draw. And so one of the things about building orders and summons right now is that they are 2 of the most consistent ways to get characters out or get dupes on characters that you need to save as quickly as possible. And Nabal Superiority just wrecks those turns. And that's something that I think it's a lot more powerful card than I'm wondering why it doesn't seem to play.
Nabal Superiority, it's just the gamble effect of it.
Sure.
You can't, you don't know what your opponent's plot deck is. You can't guarantee they aren't running a couple of winter or summer cards. I think it was much less of a gamble maybe a month ago.
Sure.
I think it's getting to be more and more of one.
Yeah, I mean, especially as, like, the new set book comes out, it's something that we really have to...
And the other thing is, Yeah, you're stopping them from getting good econ off, but it's not like you get any good econ in exchange.
Sure.
So it's Naval Superiority is a card you kind of have to play when you have superior board advantage already.
Yeah. Okay.
And I remember I was running two copies of it in a deck back in the winter. And
no
I,
one
I,
expects
I,
a second Naval
yeah,
Superiority.
Yeah, nobody expects. You hit them, you know, Noble Cause or something the first time, and then you know they're going to play some high econ Kingdom Plot the second
Trading
round.
With Pentoshi.
Yep.
It was so horrible getting hit by that.
I don't know. I've never found a problem with it personally. I've been hit by it a couple of times, but although Stark really wants to hit its drops really badly, the thing is, if I miss a turn or half a turn because I've got econ on the table, and you miss your turn because you only have two gold, it usually is fine.
But most times when people play Naval Superiority, they have one of three things in effect. They have superior board presence, they have time on the board, or they have location-based econ that can easily shore up that two gold thing. And so, I mean, if you're not playing it for that, and you're just like, you know, Hail Mary, let's see what happens.
That's kind of my point. That's
yeah.
The whole point of the Stark deck is to have board presence,
sure.
So I don't care.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, I've never had a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When you flop out big characters, like, the whole point, and correct me if I'm wrong with Stark, Stark is all about their setup. It's like they take their setup and run with it.
I mean, kind of.
I mean, I guess it's not really any different for you.
Like, there have been times when I've set up just kind of poopers.
Kind of,
I just have to
kind of poopers.
I mean, it's just like if I drop like Sansa, Tumblestone Knights, and like some other shitter, it's still fine. Like,
sorry, just thinking about the cards and shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's still fine. Like I've found that to be an acceptable setup a lot. Actually, it's like it's okay.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I think. I mean, right now, like econ is. This is something I'm focusing on. The decks that I'm playing are big and expensive. Like I said, it's Paraline deck that I'm running right now. So damn expensive. And
you should put Renly in there. He would make things cheaper.
Yeah, I should really play Renly. I think I'm going to hold out for the Tyrell Renly, no matter what he does. Like, you know, it could be reaction after you play a card your opponent punches you in the face, and I'd still play that over Paraline. And so, it's, yeah, I mean... Trading with Pentoshi, I remember when the spoiler for that card came out, and I looked at him, ew, give my opponent 3 gold? That's so terrible. I don't think I've built a deck like, since that card has come out that hasn't included trading with Pentoshi. It was, I think it's easily my second favorite card, secondary plot card.
It's not bad. It's only not bad.
Yeah, I mean, Marched is easily my favorite plot card.
Marched goes in every deck.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many times where Marched can punish someone 4-8-1. The stats are great on it. Reserves, what, 6 on it? Something like that.
I have the same love for March as you guys do.
What is that?
I just see too many situations where I end up never playing it or am forced to play it, and then it's just terrible for me. Anytime they have or like a one-cost reducer in its play, it's like, not playing March.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole point is, you know, to...
It still gets rid of a character. Yeah. Then your military can go through.
It's getting rid of a reducer, that's not helping me. Especially if I have to give up something better in a reducer to get
sure.
rid of it.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's a classic follow-up to First Snow, along with...
Yeah, that's
the
only... I played in decks that I have First Snow in it, but
yeah.
That's not every deck either.
That's fair. No, that's completely fair. I like it because it also punishes people on the first turn who... just happen to get that terrible luck of one card bluff, and I'm like,
I have maybe that. I've seen that across from me maybe one time in like 20 games.
That's really frustrating, though. It's to mulligan into like the one character flop, like, oh, I put Khal Drogo out all by himself.
Yeah, tell me about
and
my life.
Well, I mean, if you really do get mulliganed to the one character flop and paid. I assume you at least have two characters in hand and choose to play the better one. That's just a play mistake by you.
No, usually it's just because I have one character. That
wow, that's ridiculous.
And it's not like I've done... I mean, Mike has seen it happen last regional. It happened to me 3 times where, like, this deck...
I saw it happen to other people at regionals.
Yeah, this deck is tested for setup. It was running all 6 of the, like, reducer chuds. It was doing everything it could to have low. And I would draw, and I'd be like, oh, look, events and attachments. Lovely. I draw again. Oh, look, Tywin with events and attachment.
Most of the time when I've had to do like one character flop, it's because I have like Theon and Asha as my two characters.
Sure.
Like, well, I don't have 9 gold, so
just
throw he Theon down, let him get Marsh, and then bring out Asha next turn.
That's fair. No, that's completely fair. And, yeah, I mean, if I had anyone else that I could have thrown out there, I really would have, but sometimes you just don't get that option. It's just, you know, it's hard luck. So, yeah, I mean, so going back to it, when it comes to bots now, I mean, we've got a basic set that almost everyone's running. There are plots that no one likes to run except for specific circumstances, like rebuilding, for instance. You know, outside of Targ, I haven't seen a real use for it. It's,
Like shuffle 5 cards into your deck or discard 5.
Three cards. Yeah.
I don't like rebuilding.
I don't like it either, but a lot of people like to do it for Crown of Gold.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
That just seems like a stick more than anything else.
Sure.
Like, the frequency with which you go through your entire deck in Game of Thrones is so low that I do not think shuffling 3 cards, like, just the added chance of drawing that card again is not worth the plot that will do nothing if you don't draw it.
Well, I mean, you do rebuilding 2 building orders and, like, you know. I'm not saying it's good.
So you're playing a chain of bad plots.
I don't like it.
Okay.
I can see what people are thinking there, but I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's useless for the first 2 or 3 rounds of the game.
If you were reliably going through, like,
a 5 gold plot.
Okay.
Wait, it's a 5-5 one?
Yeah. Maybe something. I know. It's
good stuff.
Vanilla. But it's just like, if you could reliably go through like half your deck, I think that would be a little bit more of a reasonable card. But even then, you're still looking at like not ever seeing.
Summons, look at your entire deck.
Yeah, if there was like a scheme, it was like discard 30 cards from your deck, and then you could shuffle 3 back in, and then summons right afterwards.
Yeah, that would be, you know, then I could see
wow.
It actually seeing play. But just like, with the way it is, it's just like. I would rather just draw a card. Like, I'd rather have a plot that actually does something to the board state.
Yeah, I'm with you wholeheartedly. That actually affects the board state. Actually, I have a question. I don't know if it's addressed. I've read the rules and the rules reference guide quite a few times, but I don't think I've seen this. What happens if you try to draw a card and there are no more cards in your deck?
You lose.
Is it in the rules?
Yes.
Are you sure? I don't know if I saw it. Okay.
Almost 100% sir.
Okay. See, in that circumstance, rebuilding would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. This game went to turn 40.
Well, I mean, you know, with Greyjoy Mill.
That's 2 Baratheon players with Iron Thrones out there.
Or
just
Red
staring
Keeps.
At each
Red
other.
Keeps. Oh, Iron Thrones, yeah. Fair enough. And Chamber of the Painted Table, never playing the character. There's got to be a way to do it. I want to see Greyjoy Mill come back. I don't think there's any support.
Was it ever there to begin with?
No.
It was this half-hearted attempt at 1.0. And Greyjoy Choke was there. Like, there's no doubt about that. But
I'm looking forward to the Greyjoy Choke.
Yeah, I mean, we only got what? Let's see. True Steel's the last chapter pack, and then we get the Winter and Summer agendas.
At Gen Con, probably.
You think so? Think it's going to be a Gen Con?
Well, I mean...
I'm hoping for a big box release, honestly, at Gen Con.
Maybe.
Yeah, they would have said something already.
I'm just saying... Well, then if there is a big box at Gen Con, then the next cycle of chapter packs probably won't come out until after Gen Con.
Yeah,
I mean,
they'll do the thing they always do at Gen Con. They'll have an empty box sitting in a glass display case, like, check out the artwork for the box you're going to get in 5 months.
Yeah.
No, they usually...
Just the way they've been doing LCGs recently, once
these
the cycle ends. They wait 3 or 4 months usually until after Gen Con to finish the next cycle.
Sure. I mean, Netrunner and Conquest, you know, every Gen Con, Netrunner's always got a big box there. And
it wasn't always a big box. Sometimes it was a chapter pack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, I stopped playing Netrunner after the first cycle, so I don't really know.
I quit playing it after the first game.
So. I mean, I liked Netrunner.
It was
a
good game. It was fun for a while until it wasn't.
Yeah, like the way they did it. With Netrunners, it was like 6. They did like 6 pack cycles and then a big box. But unlike Game of Thrones, it didn't take a whole year to get the 6 chapter packs out.
Yeah.
So
they
would be like right in the middle of a chapter pack cycle when Gen Con rolled around.
Oh,
like
okay.
Yeah.
So
at least while we were playing Netrunner, there was not a single time where they skipped a chapter pack, like. Like how Game of Thrones, we've got this like lull where it's gonna take like a month and a half to get the next chapter pack or whatever. That never happened in Netrunner. It was literally once a month, like once
the cycle started. What lull do we have?
Right now. We didn't get a chapter pack last month, did we?
Yeah.
Well, if you count comp.
Okay, that was at like the end of the month though. Which usually they're releasing it's like
that's
the
about
middle.
The biggest chapter pack you can go for.
Yeah. True Seal, I think's coming out at the end of May.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it just feels like it to me because I haven't been playing as much. But
sure.
Like in
Netrunner, then it'll be June, July, and all of August, like before we have something. Most likely, I'm not saying that they've announced that, but.
And I wonder if they're going to do the same thing they've always done with Thrones. Like, what's for? I mean, how long in terms of release for what's legal at Gen Con?
Like,
you don't think that if they release something at Gen Con, it will not be legal in tournaments?
Yeah, agreed.
I don't think the summer and winter mechanics will be fully fleshed out by then.
You don't think so?
With only two
summer
packs?
Summer Targ Dothraki, man? It'd crush all you.
Oh, you're talking about Worlds in November.
No, I'm talking about Gen Con.
Oh, well, they will. They, if anything, they'll probably just be coming out at Gen Con.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, I think summer is going to be, I wouldn't say a fully fleshed out mechanic, but I think there will be some useful things in summer. And winter, I don't know so much. Like, I'm excited about building Winter Greyjoy, you know, just for Fish Whiskers, because I think after this winter definitely comes out, Fish Whiskers is going to be...
Yeah, well, I mean, just being a Greyjoy choke deck would be really helpful, too. Like,
yeah.
Wraiths Are Missed, and then...
Which will finally get used,
yeah.
Which is great. Is Wraiths Are Missed winter?
Yes.
Is it winter? Okay.
That's why you would play it, Mickey.
I realize that. I just, to be perfectly honest, I never really paid attention to the card after reading it for the first time. Oh, here we go. Oh, buy two. Nice. Oh, yeah, that would be really nice.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Greyjoy Winter is going to be very, very MPE for everyone that didn't
play
it. Greyjoy Choke in 1.0.
Well, Greyjoy Choke in
1.0. Do you look forward to playing Joe with your new MPE deck?
Yeah,
that's
always.
That's Sandy. Oh, playing Joe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Playing against Joe.
What is he going to do?
With Greyjoy Choke. I don't know. Throw fit.
It's broke.
If anything...
We missed you, Joe.
Though maybe he'll just be recruiting for my discard pile by then, so he'll be okay with it.
Right? Oh, the Night Gathers. I cannot wait for this card. I think it looks really good.
I think it looks really bad.
What are you talking about? Varus and Yorin? That's awesome.
Other than Varus, how is a Night's Watch player going to get cards into their opponent's discard pile?
Double March,
Varus,
Intrigue Challenges.
Yep.
And the Chud that they march is going to be a better option than something you draw into out of your own deck.
Yeah, usually.
You're saying Night's Watch cards are just that bad. Their characters are so terrible that some Tumblestone Knight or something that your opponent marched is better than...
No, I'm saying they just throw them out there. And
honestly, Nightwatch could choke too, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think Night's Watch choke is going to be very much like, and it's a great defensive deck. When you're killing reserve, you're killing their ability to marshal cards.
Wraith in your mist in order to get into the Night Gathers easier.
Mike, would you like to rethink your...
Remind me, what's Wraith?
Reduce their reserve by two.
Yeah.
Be awesome.
And doesn't Winters reduce it by another one or something like that?
Yep. And so, I mean, it's to a minimum of two.
Yeah.
So
still, if you're making your opponent discard their entire hand besides two cards.
Maybe I just think it's a bad card because I saw the Night's Watch thing on it.
I think coming up here soon, we Night's Watch is someone that we're going to really have to start paying attention.
Yeah,
I agree. As much as I talk shit about him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Tyrell's just there yet, but I think Night's Watch Defense and Night's Watch Winter are actually going to be a thing, especially in the next four chapter packs.
I would hope that Night's Watch Winter would be in any house. It was appropriate to have, you know, be strong with Winter.
Yeah.
Winter is coming. Come on now. It's in my saying. It's on my clan card.
Yeah.
How's that Stark type working for you?
Stark's really strong right now.
Okay.
I think that's another house, like, we don't see a lot of play, and I mean, we see some play in tournaments, but the real reason for it is that people just didn't know how to build with Stark. But when you play against someone like Matt or like John, who's another person in our meta, who's playing with Stark, they're really powerful. We went with my Lanny Kraken, and now since then, Lanny Kraken, Bear of Fealty, and Lanny Lord of the Crossing. I've maybe won one game.
I just haven't seen it yet. Matt, I'm playing you after this. Because I have yet to lose to a Stark deck.
Play against Matt and John, and your respect for Stark will shoot up there. I mean, the Wolves in the North box gave them so many tricks and tools. And I think one of the things is Stark's playstyle isn't for everybody. And that's the whole thing. You have to have a very specific mindset to play Stark military aggression, as Matt put it before. And knowing what's a good flop, knowing what's like a good hand that you have able to draw back into is so key with those decks. And it is so surprising in the early game when you're sitting across from Catelyn with an Ice on her, and you're like, what? And then you see either Serio drop or Wardens of the North drop, and you're like, oh, fuck. My seven drop is dying. You know, and other little tricks like that. I didn't have respect for new Jon Snow, the new Stark Jon Snow, until you run one of him. One thing that Stark got that none of the other houses have right now is such a wide character pool that you can go back to the deck building of old where you just throw in one character, and if they die, who cares? There's no more dead cards
in
your deck.
That's very classic Stark play, at least for me. Most of my deck was one of the characters.
Exactly, and it's back. And the thing about it is Stark just doesn't care. Like, the characters that they actually care about, you can tell because they either have a dupe on them or some kind of save. And you know, God help you, Jory's out there.
Yep.
Great, now I'm worthless. So Stark is so strong right now. And, you know, I feel like the only reason we're not seeing a huge resurgence of Stark is that people just don't have the temperament to play them. I don't, you know, I've tried playing Stark, it's just not my playstyle. And I appreciate a good Stark deck, and I heavily respect it. If it's a good player behind it, you've got to really hope that your draw is good, because otherwise Stark's just going to run ramshot right over you.
Yeah, like you recall, we played in the tournament right after the podcast that built the deck in, and you said you were very unimpressed. But you also started duped Tywin, duped Nymeria, duped Tyrion, and a mountain. And
I had the Nymeria because I just kept stripping the Wolves of the North over
and I
and
still
over.
Only barely lost. I killed two of those four characters. If I'd have killed one more, I probably would have been able to win. So I think,
and having seen that game partially, you got a bad start.
Oh yeah, the start was not great.
Yeah, I mean, that's something to consider. Like, you know, Stark gets a bad start. Okay, you have Nymeria out there. Nymeria is one of the hard counters to Stark, honestly.
Oh, she's a hard counter to virtually everything.
Yeah.
Sure.
Real pain in the butt.
Yeah, definitely. And so, I mean, but coming into it, I mean, the houses I think that are going to really benefit from winter once again. Do you think, what do you think of Stark? Does Stark benefit from winter or summer in any way?
I don't think we've seen enough cards to make that decision.
Because thematically, I mean, wouldn't that be a house that should benefit from
winter?
They
They have like a couple of cards that key off of the reveal plot being winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't Winterfell?
Winterfell,
Hard as Winter. Unfortunately, Winterfell is too expensive,
yeah,
and Hard
really
as Winter
expensive.
Is too niche.
Winterfell is amazing.
I'm sure it's amazing.
It's
so better be
expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. And having played against it, even one of the things that you got to watch out for in its reaction when a challenge is initiated and you decide to do that reaction is that if the Stark player doesn't have a winter plot card reveal, they also cannot trigger anything. And it's something that if you're in a competitive format, don't just think that because they played a four-cost location that they can just, you know, go to town on you. If they don't have a winter plot, they can't do reactions either, which includes ice. So one thing to really, really consider with that. But other than that, you know, blanket plus one strength, everybody isn't bad. Whenever burn becomes a thing again, you know, that's going to be really helpful. But that ability, it saves you from tears. It saves you from put to the sword, right?
What faction benefits from the summer plot, the summer agenda?
Targ.
I'm hoping some summer burn.
Well, I mean, and there's also Hago. While you have a summer plot reveal, stand again. It's good, man. I mean, come on, you got.
Is there any other cards out there that key off of summer right now?
I cannot think of anything. Mike, can you?
Not off the top of my head. Martell obviously should have some summer effects too.
Let's see.
I know that there's a winter plot that says each player without a summer plot revealed removes one power from their thing, but that's not really what I'm thinking
in
terms of a game mechanic that features summer.
I mean, I don't think thematically the summer houses would be Tyrell, Martell, and Targ, and the winter houses would be, I guess, Greyjoy, Stark, and Night's Watch. And then the other ones would just not run seasons or would have very few seasonal effects.
Oh, it's so sad. Tyrell Baratheon are like, we don't care.
As long as we're talking about agendas, I have another question.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of banners in like a year or two? Do you think banners are just something to suit the format while it's still small, or will they still be relevant once there's like 8 other agendas out there to pick from?
So this is something I've been thinking about a lot. One of the things that I liked about 1.0 was the freedom of just throwing cards from other houses in and just paying, you know, 2 extra gold. You didn't have, there was no banner to it. You had when you had fealty to one of the other houses, like
Alliance and
what was the other one? The ones that were
treaties.
Yeah, treaty with the North and things like that. And you know, you had those, but you didn't really play them because if you're going to play good cards from other houses, just pay the 2 gold or find other ways to mitigate it. In 2.0, what's really strange is the only way to combine factions now is by doing this. So I think as long as there are combinations that people find and synergies between 2 houses, I think we're going to see banner houses be just as viable right now. Like, for instance, houses that are susceptible to first snow winter, what do? You banner in big characters, right?
I mean, that's what I'm talking about, though. It seems like banners are necessary while the card pool is, like, really tiny.
Because
you need to be able to expand on what your faction is doing.
Sure.
But I feel like as more and more cards come out, like, fealty is just the only thing you could play with if you wanted to go in all one faction deck right now. But as, like, more and more loyal cards, like, Stark in their big box got so many loyal cards.
Yeah.
I feel like Stark fealty is amazing because you'll be able to hit your fealty every turn.
Sure.
I mean, almost more than once per turn if you actually could, you're able to do that.
That would be great.
I think as long as they keep printing non-loyal cards, though, banners are still going to be a thing.
Yeah.
But decent non-loyal cards.
I know. Like, yeah. I just, I'm not a very big fan of banners whatsoever. When half of my econ suite relies on me playing characters from my own house,
yeah,
and you either have to banner in like their little reducers too, which a lot of people love because it gives more one cost guys so you can like get a better flop and stuff.
Sure,
but
sure.
I just think it leads, I did a Greyjoy Martell banner and I can't tell you how many times I had Nymeria in hand. I'm like, do I play an econ plot just to get Nymeria into play? Because
exactly.
I can't bring her in right now because all of my reducers are Greyjoy. But if I do that, then I might not be able to afford Balin later on if
sure.
I get him. So I'm just not a big fan of banners. And I mean, going forward, it's not like you can play banner and winter and stuff
sure.
like that. So I think mono faction decks are going to be more prevalent as more agendas come out. Unless there's an agenda that says like gain this benefit and you may play a banner agenda or something like that.
Yeah, I think eventually they are going to start introducing like the Alliance agenda things. I mean, what do you think, Mike?
I think as long as we keep seeing decent cards that are non-loyal, though, banners will still remain relevant. As long as they don't go printing stupid, broken Maester's Path Long Voyage agendas that every house just, you know, all of a sudden every single faction is running the same agenda because it works equally well across all of them.
I think
banners will remain relevant.
Do you think we'll ever see themed agendas? Now, what I mean by that is an agenda that gives you a certain ability that says you may also, you know, banner to X house. That, you know, like maybe like a thematic meeting of things, like, power behind the throne will be Lannister, and it lets you banner to Baratheon, or the other way around.
I don't know, possibly.
I never thought of it, but that'd be kind of neat. Like, if you had the banner built into a certain agenda. Now, it would have to have a negative that would balance that out, but that'd be a neat concept, you know?
Maybe it's just because of my gaming history, like playing other kind of card games that had agenda-like things, But I always enjoyed getting some sort of passive benefit for the entire game, where
sure.
Banner does not give you a passive benefit. It just lets you, it's a deck building restriction lifter, basically.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you never draw into those Martell cards you put in, then it's literally doing nothing for you. If you draw into all of the Martell cards and have no reducers to play them, then you're like crushing yourself internally.
Yeah.
But I know it's all a lot of people like them right now. Like, freaking Banner, let me get that Iron Mine and stuff
oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Definitely.
I just don't know if it's due to the limited card pool or if it's really going to be like a long-lasting thing that's going to be in the environment forever and ever.
Yeah, I mean, as long, and I think it was like Mike was saying, you know, as long as they keep printing good non-loyal cards. Like right now, one of the decks that's running around certain metas is Greyjoy, what is it, Greyjoy Targ? You know, it's basically Miri plus ships just to get her challenges through. And, you know, as long as synergies like that exist, I think you'll see it. But I think you're right. You know, as the card grows, it's going to be, there are more benefits to staying with one faction and within your own faction. And especially with the agenda support that, you know, then why not? You know, what's the point of diluting your deck with cards you're going to have difficulties playing, including, like, you know, neutral cards? You know, the expense, like, the maybe the days of the expensive neutral cards will end at some point.
Unless you're doing Wildlings.
I know. Has anyone tried building Wildlings yet?
There's only a couple. I mean,
yeah.
The thing is, like, Wildlings really look like Nightwatch characters right now, where they all have one icon, not a whole lot of strength,
sure.
and very marginal abilities.
Yeah, I mean, the only house I could conceivably see running about it right now is Lannister, because of gold. You know, that ambush idea? Like, I don't know, I was playing with the first Snow Lanny Wildlings deck idea, and it didn't really ever come to fruition, mostly because when I kept looking at the deck list, I'm like, I don't really think it's worth spending the time building this
thing. That king over the, what's the king over the wall's name?
Mance Raider.
He's not a bad card, though.
No, he's not.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he is actually pretty good.
It's like seven cost, tricon, how much power?
Five strength,
and renown.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. He can definitely shore up some issues in certain houses. You know, like, maybe, I mean, I think one day thematically they're going to have to make it viable to play this out of Night's Watch. And, I don't know, I think one of the ideas that I had...
Joe is... I can hear him across town screaming at you for that conversation.
No, check it out. So, like maybe release Moletown Brothel, right? And it's a zero-cost reducer location. Reduce the cost of the next neutral character you play this turn by one. Or you make it one cost and reduce it by two. Something like that, right? Like, having built into Night's Watch the ability to reduce neutral characters, I think would be really neat. It would increase the chances of playing. I mean, I'm not saying it's viable, I'm just saying it'd be fun. And then, you know, here's my thing. If Moletown Brothel comes out and it's reduced the cost of a neutral character, in your face, guys. That's what we call it.
But to backtrack a little bit, I agree with Danny's stance on banners.
Yeah.
They're just not proactive enough for my own personal taste, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've tried a couple of banners, and I was just never really satisfied with what the other faction brought. But that was a long time ago, back when you were like, I want to banner for this one card.
Yes.
And now I have these other nine cards to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, and there are banners out there that bring a great sweep to certain decks. Like a banner to the Kraken, as Danny was pointing out, yeah, it's Iron Mines, but it's also Stealth. You know, Asha, Theon, Wendemir, and then also Location Control with Newly Made Lord. I mean, that's a really strong thing to bring to decks that necessarily don't have something like that. Look at Tyrell, for instance. Tyrell gets wrecked by Greyjoy. And bringing a Greyjoy banner into it keeps your characters on the board longer, lets you stop, stealth military challenges from Greyjoy. And, yeah, they might blow up your Arbor, but then you just blow up one of their things, too. You know, get back at them. I think, I agree with you guys. I don't think banner is going to be a thing for the rest of the game, but I think there will be some houses that will either try to shore up a weakness or find a good synergy between two houses where it's always going to be a thing, but I don't think it's always going to be the way to go. Because I think you put it very aptly, Danny. It's the reason we're doing it right now is we have such a small card pool. There's just no other options. Like, give me another agenda besides Lord of the Crossing to play with.
Yeah. If the first, like, neutral agenda had been anything besides just a gigantic slap in the face, if you don't have, like, all three icons profusely covered in your house,
yeah,
And I think maybe a lot more people would be on that right now.
I mean, and don't get me, Lanny and Greyjoy and Martell, Lord of the Crossing decks are really strong. They still are, in my opinion. I think, like, right now I'm building a Night's Watch Lord of the Crossing. Honestly, it's just because of Unsworn Apprentice. I'm like, ooh, I can shore up. You know, I'm not even running the wall in it. It's totally just like,
well, yeah, obviously. If you want to make three challenges, you're not going to defend three challenges as well.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it was really just Unsworn Apprentice and Practice Blade. I'm like, ooh, I can get whatever icon I don't have. That's fun. Yeah, once again, it's one of those decks that I look at this. Like, that takes effort. I don't know if I'm going to pull that. But, you know, Throne CB is great. You can just build crap decks and just never play with them ever again. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting how the game's going to progress at this point. When we see winter and summer agendas come out, you know, are those going to take over, you know, with the houses that we talked about? And then are we going to see even less? And then what's coming out? Do we have any other agendas?
We don't have any other indication of what's coming out.
I don't know if they'll put any other agendas out next cycle.
You don't
think
so?
Maybe one. They'll focus on winter and summer.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, they'll do it like
that. Well, they've already said that they want to do like a king theme. I would not be surprised if there's some kind of agenda out there that will benefit kings in some way.
Yeah, but there's some houses that won't even get one. Yeah. So that's kind of
only two: Night's Watch and Martell. Wait, does Martell get a king? No.
I don't think so.
They don't get kings.
It doesn't make any sense for them to get kings.
No, so I think they're the only two houses that want.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying I would not be terribly surprised if we saw one.
Oh, Viserys. Okay, there.
And that's a really crappy. I can't even remember what his new card does.
He forces you to make an attack with your king if you have one. If you don't have one, he gains a power every turn.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Does he have intrigue?
I don't remember.
I think he just a one card, the one power. One power icon, or one strength power icon, just like the normal form right now.
Yeah.
I'd rather get rid of
attachment. Exactly.
That sounds much better. Blood Magic Ritual should go away. What do you guys think of Blood Magic Ritual? This card is getting shit on by so many people. I think it's amazing.
I do not know what card you're referring to.
Well, the only thing I've heard is that I've heard people complaining that save is like a Greyjoy thing, so it's stupid that Targ has it, but I don't think it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just fine. It's a one cost event. You attach it, when a character would be killed, attach Blood Magic Ritual to them, a non army character.
Right.
That character's text box is blank. That's it. It's a save that blanks the text box. And then,
I think that's fine.
So the beauty of it is, on an army, you can save an army character and it doesn't attach. And
you can't save an army character.
Not
an army character.
No. It says save the character, then attach.
Oh, no.
No, it says choose and save a non-army
the Viserys, yeah, the Viserys, the new Viserys King is two cost, one strength, power icon. While Viserys is attacking, each king character must be declared as a defender, if able. And interrupt when the dominance phase ends. If no opponent controls a king character, Viserys gains one power.
Oh, okay.
That's even more terrible than what we thought it was a minute ago.
Yep, you're right, Mike. It is when a non-army character we go, oh, dragons, other people with no attachments.
Yeah, you know, it's still fine. Yeah. It's, you know,
it's a one cost
it's,
save.
It's Veggie Drogo. It's,
yeah, exactly.
It's thematic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I agree. And also, a body's a body. You know, you throw the body out there, great.
Also, since we're talking about kings, I didn't play a whole lot of 1.0, but I did buy the Greyjoy expansion for 1.0.
Oh, yeah.
And it came with a whole bunch of kings, and every faction got either a king or a queen. For Martell, it was Mycella.
Yeah, they got Mycella. She was always decent if you wanted to build the kind of deck that she went into.
She was great in melee. Wasn't that Mycella that was good in melee?
She like pumped knights up or something.
Was that one of them? Okay, it's been a while since I've seen that. Yeah, no, there were a lot of good ones. Was the King Renly the Kneel and Influence to stand in? He was a 5/3 strength tricon.
That was that core one. The only Renly I ever played was the 3 cost for 5 strength with two icons of Renown Renly. I don't know why you would run a different one. Yeah. That one was just like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Blood Magic Ritual, I could see it being a 1 of or a 2 of in a deck. The other thing is, I always want to do goofy things with cards when I see this. It doesn't say your character. So let's say you go ahead and just put to the sword their trip to Tywin, and if you're the first player, you have the first response to that, so then you can just blank their Tywin.
Why would you just rather have him killed?
Because
he's got
trips on him.
Oh, okay, as you were just saying. You confused me by saying trips instead of dupes, like a normal person.
Well, I mean, he meant that there were two copies.
I understand that, but dupe does not mean you have two copies. It means you have duplicates, which can mean two on it as well.
Good point. Very good point.
But, I mean, that's what... I look at cards and see goofy things like with the Eerie.
That's a two-card combo.
I'm about to Wildfire, and I'm going to use the Eerie at the beginning of my turn on their Tumblestone Knight, so they have to kill Rob instead. Not that I would ever actually play the Eerie.
I was talking about...
But that combo you just... That's a 3-gold Milk of the Poppy. That is much harder to pull off.
Yes, this is true.
I was talking to Luke Wortley from The White Book, and he was saying something along the lines of, one day someone is going to find a way to break the Eerie, and it's going to completely break the meta, and that will be the only deck that gets played. One day, like, that card will be the most amazing thing that's out there right now.
I can see it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Eventually they're going to slip up, give someone Double Renown or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, Invincible Double Renown.
Right.
Basically deal with it. New adder.
Yeah. Well, and the ability to say, I mean, like, basically you Voltron someone.
Yeah.
And then you just...
We're not quite there yet. Well, I was actually trying to build a Voltron deck last night.
Yeah. It's just... I agree with him. It might be a thing eventually, but it just needs to... There just needs to be a series of missteps by Fantasy Flight that seem very small at first, but, like, so, like, some guy that says, like, you can build a location for 1 gold cost less or something like that, and everyone's like, that guy sucks.
Yeah.
And then somewhere down the line, someone is Devil Renowned, or like, oh, that guy's pretty good.
And then there's
And I can run 3 of this guy because he's non-unique and he lowers the... So I can make, like, a location. You're only costing me 1 gold then, and I can just... Oh, I got it.
Yep, and then the other key to that is the ability to stand a kneeling location.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can stand it and use it again.
Oh, they were very careful in 1.0 with that.
Yeah.
But there were very few effects.
Builder.
Locations.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Veteran Builders does that already.
Okay, so the prediction then is Night's Watch. Sack the Veteran Builders, stand it, you know, use it multiple times.
I don't know. I have never been a fan of Voltron type strategies, regardless of what support they have personally. But
I mean, you know, if that's the deck that's out there.
I mean,
plot deck is entirely searches and draw just to get your pieces. Like, it doesn't cost.
They're not empirically bad.
Sure.
Oh, I've never been a fan of them either. They're like the ultimate glass cannon, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I remember people were still trying to play Beric Dondarrion decks, like, in the last 6 months of 1.0. He was a character that couldn't be killed and couldn't be discarded from play. Except I'm still running Milk, so...
Well, I mean, that was the thing for a while was, you know, Beric was such a big deal that when people were running him, there was tech against it when he first came out. And, you know, you do a pre-plot Nightmares, and, you know, yay, Valor. I mean, that's one way to kill him, but towards the end of the game... No one really cared about him, so you saw this, like, apparently a late-game resurgence.
Just a couple of decks.
Sure.
I mean, if you didn't have an answer for a character that can't be killed and can't be discarded from play and has Renown, and you give him an attachment and he has double Renown, and then yeah, I mean, it's an effective deck, but the minute that your opponent has any sort of answer to it...
Yeah, I mean, and as we... I guess kind of segueing from... Beric Dondarrion. You know, right now, with each cycle, they're essentially printing characters from that time in whatever book or series. Do you guys think they're following the books or the HBO series?
I do not have enough.
I don't think they're doing either, honestly. I mean, like, they said, like, the first chapter pack is going to be just in the books. And I'm sure they have some justification for that. But it's not like Daenerys had an unsullied army in the first book.
Yeah, right. That's true.
So they're obviously willing to make some exceptions, no matter, regardless of what book or TV show they're following.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
I would think they probably steer the design team more for the HBO series than for the books, though.
Would we? So when would we see something like the Brotherhood Without Banners? That's what I want to know. Like, so there were going back to Beric, actually, the characters with the cannot be killed effect on them. Do you think? Do you think we're going to see that? I think the only character, and this is a spoiler coming up. If you haven't read the books, so stop listening for about 30 seconds, just a fair warning. Beric can't be killed. So, I don't know if that's much of a spoiler, but
that is.
I'm pretty sure he can be killed.
Oh, sorry, Matt. You should have stopped listening. I told you.
I'm pretty sure he can be killed. He just comes back to life after he's killed.
Yeah, that's true. They keep bringing
so
it back.
So he's Kenny.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
if Kenny had the magic of, the Lord of Light.
Well, Kenny has the magic of Cthulhu.
Okay.
there were some other cannot be killed characters in at 1.0.
Like who?
There just wasn't anybody else that couldn't be killed or discarded.
Who else was cannot be killed?
Who else had plot armor?
Yeah.
I know there were a Mad King.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you controlled Jamie, then you couldn't kill the Mad King.
That's right. Yeah, but no one ever played the Mad
that
King.
That was. Oh, yes, they did.
Really?
Oh, then, yeah.
Really?
I mean,
oh, wait, this is after I had left, right?
It might have been. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That was John Bruno's champ card. Was a Mad King Heiress. You just knelt him to kill noble characters.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Unless a player controlled Jamie Lannister,
was
all kinds of medley.
that's pretty neat. Yeah, moving forward with it, it's interesting to look at all the like these kind of blood magic ritual, which is what started a lot of this. I disagree with everyone. I think a save is a save. I think it's easily, it's just a good card, you know. But then it goes to say, like, honestly, I haven't seen that much Targ around for a while. Did First Snow really crush Targ?
At least crush their spirit.
Okay. I mean, you know, like, Mike, you haven't, I mean, you're a resident Targ player, and I haven't seen you pick up a Targ deck in 2-3 months.
I haven't. First Snow was just, it hit it so hard.
Yeah.
I even won some games against people running it, but it was kind of just dumb luck.
Yeah.
I mean, I got Danny and Drogo out on the first snow turn, got a dupe on one of them so that I didn't get both of them killed and one of them marched, you know, the next turn.
Well, what's the problem with the banner then? Once again, you know, talking about how, you know, when the card pool bannering to some bigger characters, I think one of the older Targ decks that was really popular for a while was Targ Lion. And then came this like surge of really fast decks once Lady Sansa's Rose came out. So Targ Line was a little too slow. I mean, have you tried a Targ Line since then?
No, I haven't. I still think it's valid.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to build tonight. I'm going to build a Targ Line. Because no one's going to expect it.
I might work on that one.
Yeah, okay, let's do that after we're done with this. And we'll post a deck list if anyone's interested. Just let us know. Yeah, I think that's about all the time that we have for today. Thank you everybody for listening. It was a pleasure. I'd like to thank Arkham House Games for once again hosting us every week like they do. I'd like to thank Stephen Jakubik of inexistence.org. He does all of our, you know, computer work and hosting. You should check him out. Anybody else? You guys want to get any shout outs?
We rambled a little bit this time, so sorry for that, everybody. We'll try to stay on topic a little bit more in the future.
Danny, any
I know I usually end with a famous fact, but out of respect for Joe, I think I'll save the one I have right now for next time, because I know it's like his favorite part of doing the show is getting to hear what I've found out that's like unique and interesting.
That's fair. Well, then we'll wait with bated breath for Joe. And
actually, I do have something to say.
Matt has something to say.
I do. I'm a little sad that nobody said what you're talking about, Willis, at all. I was waiting for the opportunity, Danny. Never gave me one.
Awesome. Well, if you guys have any suggestions, comments on what you'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to leave us a message, and thank you very much.